そうです。もう一個やってくれよ。And I hope you had a good time meditating. Tonight, I will give a talk on the Sutta. And this Sutta is interesting and also it is important for those who practice the Vipassana meditation. It contains instructions on the practice of the Vipassana meditation, but in a very brief form. But we are fortunate because we have the ancient commentaries to explain this Buddha to us, and also we have our teacher. The exposition I'm going to give on this Buddha is on the traditional line, and it is actually a passing on of what I understand from the commentaries and from writings of our teacher. This Sutta is called Malinkya Sutta Sutta. Or in some editions it is Malinkya Sutta. This Sutta was delivered to a monk called Malinkya Sutta. That is why it is called Malinkya Sutta Sutta. Malinkya Sutta is the name of a monk. And we find him in conversation with the Buddha in some other places. The meaning of his name is that the son of Malinkya, or Malinkya's son. Malinkya is the name of a Brahmin woman who lived during the time of the Buddha. When he was the son of that Brahmin woman, he was called Malinkya Sutta. Sometimes offsprings are named are known by their parents' name, and sometimes parents are known by the name of their offspring. I think we have parents in English language too, like named Johnson, Davidson, Smithson, and so on. And there was a couple during the time of the Buddha who are called Nakula Mata and Nakula Pita. That means Nakula's mother and Nakula's father. So they were known by the name of their son. Here the monk was known by the name of his mother, Malinkya. So he was called Malinkya Buddha. We do not know much about this monk, but from the Sutta we gather that this monk joined the order early in his life, but he did not meditate. Maybe he was fond of speculative questions, interested in metaphysical problems. So once he asked metaphysical questions to the Buddha, and these questions came to be known as undeclared questions or unanswered questions. These questions are asked by other people too. So one day, he dwelt in seclusion, and after being alone in seclusion, the thought arose in his mind. There are these fields of views undeclared by the Blessed One, set aside and avoided by him, namely, the world is eternal, and the world is not eternal, and the world is finite, and the world is infinite. And the soul is the same as the body, and the soul is one, and the body another. And after death, the Tathagata is. Tathagata means the Buddha. And after death, the Tathagata is not. And after death, the Tathagata both is and is not. And after death, the Tathagata neither is nor is not. So these are the 10 questions. The Blessed One does not declare these to me. Declare means does not give answers to him. So the Blessed One does not declare these to me, and it is not to my preference and liking that he does not declare them to me. So I shall go to the Blessed One and ask him the meaning of this. If he declares for any one of these statements, I will live in the holy life under him. If he does not, I shall forsake the training and revert to what I abandon. That means, if the Buddha gives answers to any of these questions, I will continue being a monk and live in holy life under him. And if he does not answer any of these questions, I will go back to lay life. So that evening, he went to the Buddha, and after paying homage to him, he said to the Buddha, "If the Blessed One knows the world is eternal, let the Blessed One declare to me the world is eternal. If the Blessed One knows the world is not eternal, let the Blessed One declare to me the world is not eternal. If the Blessed One does not know either the world is eternal or the world is not eternal, then it is straightforward for one who does not know and does not see to say, 'I do not know, I do not see.'" He was himself straightforward because he went to the Buddha and asked this question. So it means, if you know, please answer, and if you don't know, just tell me you don't know. So he asked the same with the other question. Then Buddha said, "How then, Malunga Buddha, did I ever say to you, 'Come, Malunga Buddha, lead the holy life under me, and I will declare to you the world is eternal, or the world is not eternal,' and so on?" Then he answered, "No, Venerable Sir." And Buddha said, "Did you ever tell me, 'I will lead the holy life under the Blessed One, and the Blessed One will declare to me the world is eternal or the world is not eternal,' and so on?" He said, "No, Venerable Sir. That being so, misguided man, what are you and what are you forsaking?" So there was no agreement between Malunga Buddha and Buddha that Buddha would answer this question. And since there was no agreement like this, and when he asked these questions, Buddha just said, "What are you and what are you forsaking?" And then Buddha continued, "If anyone should say thus, 'I will not lead the holy life under the Blessed One till the Blessed One declares to me the world is eternal, or the world is not eternal,' and so on, for that would still remain undeclared by a Tathagata. And meanwhile, that person would die, because Buddha would not give answer to this question. And if a person expects to get those answers from the Buddha, he would rather die than get these answers." Then Buddha said, "Suppose a man were wounded by a dart, thickly smeared with poison, and his friends and companions, his relatives and kin, brought a surgeon physician, and the man said, 'I will not have the surgeon pull out the dart till I know the man who wounded me, whether he was a warrior, noble caste, or divine caste, or barbarous caste, or artisan caste.' And he said, 'I will not have the surgeon pull out this dart till I know the man who wounded me, what his name and his family are.' And he said, I will not have the sergeant pull off this guard till I know the man who wounded me, whether he is tall or short or of medium height. And he said, I will not have the sergeant pull off this guard till I know the man who wounded me, whether he is dark or brown or fair skin. And he said, I will not have the sergeant pull off this guard till I know the man who wounded me, whether he lives in such a village or town or city. And he said, I will not have the sergeant pull off this guard till I know the bow that wounded me, whether it was a long bow or a crossbow. And he said, I will not have the sergeant pull out this dart till I know the bowstring that wounded me, whether it was fiber or reed or sinew or hemp or bark. And he said, I will not have the sergeant pull out this dart till I know the shaft that wounded me, whether it was wild or cultivated. And he said, I will not have the sergeant pull out this dart till I know with whose feather the arrow was feathered, whether a vulture or a hawk or a kite or a peacock or a stork. And he said, I will not have the sergeant pull off this guard till I know the shaft that wounded me, with whose sinew it was bound, whether an ox's or a buffalo's or a lion's or a monkey. And he said, I will not have the sergeant pull off this guard till I know the arrowhead that wounded me, whether it was hoof-tipped or curved or barbed or calf-toothed or an oleander. Let it still not all be known to that man, and meanwhile he would die. So too, Malunka Buddha, if anyone should say thus, I shall not live the holy life under the Blessed One till the Blessed One declares to me whether the world is eternal or not. For that would still remain undeclared by a Tathagata, and meanwhile that person would die. So Malunka Buddha was like a person who was hit by an arrow and then would not let the arrow to be taken out until he knew everything about the arrow. And Buddha said, there will never be any holy life while there is a view the world is eternal. And there will never be any holy life while there is a view the world is not eternal, and so on. And then Buddha said, while there is a view, the world is eternal, and there is a view, the world is not eternal. There is also birth, and there is aging, and there is death, and there are sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair, of which I describe the discussion here and now. So Buddha said, whether the world is eternal or not, there is this birth, this aging, this death, and sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. And of these, Buddha said, I describe the discussion here and now. So what Buddha meant was, the question put to him by Malunkya Buddha was not important, because the immediate problem for everybody was to purify his mind, to cleanse his mind of mental defilement, and to get rid of karma and citta. Just speculating on whether the world is eternal or not will not help him to get rid of defilement and to get free from this bound of rebirth. So Buddha said, while there is this view, there is also birth, aging, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. And of these I describe the destruction here and now. And Buddha said, consequently, Malunka Buddha, remember what is undeclared by me as undeclared, and remember what is declared by me as declared. And what is undeclared by me? The world is eternal, is undeclared by me. The world is not eternal, is undeclared by me, and so on, all 10 questions. Why is that undeclared by me? It is unconnected with welfare. It does not belong to the principles of holy life. It does not lead to dispassion, to fading out, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to full enlightenment, to nibbana. That is why it is undeclared by me. So even though Buddha gives answers to these questions, these answers will not help anybody to be dispassioned or to gain direct knowledge full enlightenment and nirvana. And what is declared by me, Buddha said, this is suffering is declared by me, this is the origin of suffering is declared by me, this is the cessation of suffering is declared by me, this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering is declared by me. So what Buddha declared was the Four Noble Truths. Why is that declared by me? It is connected with welfare. It belongs to the principles of holy life. It leads to dispassion, to fading out, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to full enlightenment, to nibbana. That is why it is declared by me. So these Four Noble Truths are important, and when one realizes these Four Noble Truths through direct experience, and one attains the cessation of suffering, and one attains nibbana. So what Buddha said was that, or what Buddha meant was that we should not waste time on speculations of which we cannot get definite answers, and which do not lead to discussion and so on. So the immediate problem is birth, aging, death and so on, and how to get rid of these sufferings in the world. And realizing Four Noble Truths will lead us to the final cessation of suffering. And so these are the truths Buddha declared. Now, when Buddha said this, what do you think Malunga Buddha responded? How did he respond to this answer of the Buddha? Did he get up and run away? Go away? Consequently, Malunga Buddha, remember what is undeclared by me as undeclared, and remember what is declared by me as declared. That is what the Blessed One said. The Venerable Malunga Buddha was satisfied, and he delighted in the Blessed One's words. So he was pleased with what Buddha said to him. And so he did not leave the order, he did not go back to Leela. So he continues to be a monk. But still, it seems he did not practice meditation seriously. Because when we come to the Sutta, the Malunga Buddha Sutta, which I want to talk about tonight, he was already old. So he did not pay attention to serious practice of meditation. He neglected the practice of meditation when he was young, and only when he got old, very old, did he show any desire to practice meditation. So the Sutta, I'm going to read and explain to you, is found in the Sanyutta Nikaya, that is a collection of miscellaneous suttas. And this sutta is an important sutta. Then the Venerable Malunga Buddha came to the Blessed One. Having come to him, he paid respect to the Blessed One and sat down at a suitable place. So seated, the Venerable Malunga Buddha said to the Blessed One, now, you may have noticed that you did not hear, thus have I heard, at the beginning of this sutta. I told you once, or maybe more than once, that every sutta is introduced with the word, thus have I heard. But here, you do not find these words. That is because there are thousands of suttas in this collection, and many suttas were delivered at Savatthi, at the Giravana monastery. So maybe the compilers got tired of mentioning the thus have I heard at the beginning of every sutta, and so they just left this out and let people know that whenever there is no such sentence as at one time Buddha was living and staying at Savatthi and so on, they are to take this sutta to be delivered at Savatthi. So that is why we do not find
mention of the descendants, the introducing sentence in this sutta. So we may assume that this sutta was delivered at the Vrindavana monastery in Savatthi. So he came to the Buddha, paid respect to the Blessed One, and sat down at a suitable place. So when monks went to the Buddha, or attended upon the Buddha, they sat down at a suitable place. That means not too far, not too close to, not at the back, and not higher than the Buddha, and so on. So you see that the Venerable Manukya Buddha said to the Blessed One, "Well, for me, Lord, if the Blessed One would teach me a teaching in brief, hearing his teaching from the Blessed One, I might dwell alone, secluded, mindful, with energy that dissipates defilement, and with mind directed towards enlightenment." So now he asked the Buddha to teach him a subject of meditation. Maybe he became interested because he was old now, and so he became interested in the practice of meditation. And the words he used are remarkable. "I might dwell alone, secluded, mindful, with energy that dissipates defilements, and with mind directed towards enlightenment." So this is what every meditator should do. So after hearing from the Buddha, he said, "I will dwell alone, secluded, I will be mindful, and I will be energetic, and I will direct my mind only towards enlightenment." Now this is important. He said he would dwell alone. So when you practice meditation, the best condition is to practice alone. When you practice alone, you don't have to worry about other people disturbing you, and your concentration will not be disturbed by other persons. So you can practice as much as you like without disturbance or interference from other persons. So the best thing is to practice alone. But this does not mean that if you cannot be alone, you are not to practice meditation. What about practicing in a group such as this retreat? If everybody minds his own business of meditation, you are as good as alone. And I used to say to my students that when you practice meditation, you are doing it alone. Although you may be at a retreat, you may be practicing with other persons, together with other persons, you are going alone. You are going at your own pace. Because different people have different dispositions, different experiences, and so no two persons can practice together, making progress together, and so on. So whether you practice by yourself or in a group, actually you are practicing alone. The only thing good about practicing meditation with other people is that you get inspiration from other people. When you are dejected or when you are depressed, then you can look at other people practicing diligently, and so you can get inspiration from them. And that is why it is important not to do anything to disturb, that might disturb other persons. Just as we want to be undisturbed, we should not do anything that would disturb others. So in that way, you are alone, although you may be practicing in a group. So Manukya Buddha said, "I will live alone and practice meditation. And I will be secluded." That means I will approach to a place which is secluded. This also does not mean that if you cannot find a secluded place, quiet place, you are not to practice meditation. Because in the cities, especially in modern cities, seclusion or quietness is very difficult to get. So it is best if you can find a really secluded place and practice meditation there. But if you cannot find it, if you're living in the city and want to practice meditation, and you just practice meditation among the noises and other distractions, you may ignore the noises and distractions altogether and practice meditation. Or you may make these distractions and noises the object of meditation, dwelling upon them, making note of them. But the best place is a place where there is seclusion, where there is quietness. And I'm glad to say that this place is exceptionally quiet this time. And so you have come to the best place for meditation. So Malunkya Buddha said, I will be secluded. And then Malunkya Buddha said, I will be mindful. You come here to practice mindfulness meditation. So Malunkya Buddha also said, I will be mindful. That means I will apply mindfulness to every activity, every bodily activity, or every activity of speech, or every activity in the mind. And it is important to keep mindfulness always when you are practicing meditation, especially when you are on a retreat like this. Because the practice of meditation is like rubbing sticks together to produce fire. When they wanted to produce fire in primitive days, they, among other things, they rub two sticks together until fire is produced. If they stop in the middle, then they will not be able to make fire at all. So they have to rub until they got necessary temperature to produce fire. In the same way, when you practice meditation, you have to keep mindfulness always, so that one moment of mindfulness is supported by the other moment of mindfulness, and so that you gain momentum, and so realization could come to you. So mindfulness, or being mindful, or keeping mindfulness always, is also very important during meditation.